The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol. Negative Man. Elastigirl. Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao.
Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to the Waiting for Doom podcast. It's the audio equivalent of the secluded clearing in the woods where devotees of an obscure religion gather in the moonlight. Only in this case, the obscure religion is appreciation for over 50 years of the Doom Patrol.
And the moonlight is the light of our computer screens. And the woods are the podcasts or something. Sorry, this analogy is falling completely apart. I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at @reading_hicks. And you can also find Wilfred, the Sentient Show Twitter account, which is at @WFDpod.
And I'm Mike, and you can find me on Twitter at @AvantGarve. And you can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook, and our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com. And so, after a week off, we're back with another incredible guest star who wants to chat all about the Doom Patrol.
Yes, joining us today is an artist who is unquestionably a bit of a big deal in the world of comics. He's worked for Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Image, Boom Studios, and Dynamite. He's worked on little boutique properties like Planet of the Apes, Star Wars, Flash Gordon, The Hulk, Wonder Woman, Batman.
Yes, he's also a writer with books like Kinski from Monkey Brain. He also co-writes with his wife, Karina Becco, on many of the books Paul listed, as well as his latest ongoing Invisible Republic, out every month from Image Comics.
But wait, there's much, much more. He's a storyboard artist for movies, working with indie directors like Christopher Nolan on little art house projects like Inception, The Dark Knight, The Dark Knight Rises, Interstellar, plus other tiny films like Austin Powers 3, Spider-Man 3, Jurassic Park 3, X-Men 2, and X-Men 3. Really likes threes.
Oh, God. I don't like them. It's just circumstance.
He's also got lots of upcoming films that I'm sure he won't tell us about. All this, and he's also a fan of the Doom Patrol.
Which is about all we have in common with our ridiculously accomplished and talented Gabe Hardman.
Yay.
Hello, guys. How's it going?
Hey, Gabriel. Thanks so much for joining us this week, Gabriel. Really appreciate it. I know.
I'm happy to. I kind of feel like, you know, I mean, I've done a fair amount of podcasts, but I haven't done a fair amount of incredibly niche podcasts. So I feel like this is a good direction for me to be going. I'll do like the Sandbaggers podcast, or the, you know, I don't even know what, you know, like the I don't know, they have them for like Cracker Jacks or for fax machines or something. I don't know.
Wow.
that's some specialty. But I'm excited podcast about it because I love the Doom Patrol.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
You're in a safe place here.
A very safe and very niche place. Yes.
Now, is there anything else we didn't mention that you want to talk about? So any upcoming works that you'd like to plug now?
I have a graphic novel called The Crooked Man that Karina and I wrote, and I drew, and Elizabeth Breitweiser, who colored a lot of the Marvel stuff that I did, Hulk and Agents of Atlas, mm-hmm. She's coloring it. It's from Image Shadowline, and it's a oversized, like treasury size hardcover book. It's a story, sort of revenge, crime revenge story set during the 1906 San Francisco earthquake. So it's almost like an apocalypse story because it happens, you know, in the middle of all, you know, the crazy, you know, fire and destruction that, you know, it plays out over that.
Wow.
You know, so that'll be out this summer.
Wow, that sounds cool. That's winter for Australians, I'll just point that out.
Right. It'll be out in August.
Right.
It's still August then.
Yes, true.
The universal language of months.
Yes.
So, Gabe, we usually start the show with a talk about our week in comics. How was your week in comics?
As with most creators you're going to talk to, as with Chris Sabella, I have almost no time to read comics. but I have, I mean, I've read a couple stuff, a couple things fairly recently. I read the first trade of Copperhead from Image by Jay Farber and Scott Godalewski. I don't know how you say his last name, but he did a great job. I really enjoyed that. You know, it's you know, very much a kind of, you know, contained Western type story, and but I thought that it just did it exceptionally well.
Yeah,
and I was really into that. I recently read the first. This was last week, but I recently read the first arc of Trees, Warren Ellis and Jason Howard's book, mm-hmm. Which I liked a lot. And I read the 2-issue Greg Rucka, Cully Hamner question arc from Convergence. I won't pretend to understand what Convergence is or anything about it, but I felt like that, and I actually did read a couple of other books in that of those books, because there was a certain, you know, both nostalgic appeal to some of the titles and also the just that there were some really good creators on the but I really liked the Rucka one because it felt like it didn't have the Rucka Cully Hamner one because it felt like it didn't it wasn't so bogged down by, you know, by the issues of or the constraints of that crossover, and they were able to tell a, you know, a good story with those characters that I like.
Yeah, well, I've been calling the Convergence event like the petting zoo of the pre-52 for people.
Right, right, yeah.
Right. Get to visit your old friends and see them in this weird environment.
I would rather just not see them in the weird environment. I'd rather just people tell a story. I mean, I found, more so the fact that obviously several of these things were so hampered by the idea that everyone had to sit around not having superpowers for an issue until something happened. And this is not a solid foundation to build a story on, or at least for some things. But I felt like the question one really skirted that in a good way.
Would you like to talk about your recent visit to a certain office?
Oh, you mean DC Comics? Yeah. Mm. So DC Comics, I don't know if everybody knows, I assume so, they all, you know, editorial all moved out to Burbank from New York, breaking the historic bonds of publishing or whatever. You know, like they, publishing was always in New York, and then they moved to Burbank to be next to Warner Brothers. And what I work in movies, I live in Los Angeles, and we actually live really close to there. And recently we did a Wonder Woman book for the Sensation Comics thing, which was actually loads of fun.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I love doing it. Going to Apocalypse and working with all that stuff. It was really, really fun. And we know people over there and stuff. So we got an invite. They had sort of an open house, and we got an invite over there to, do a little tour of the offices and stuff. And there were loads of people over there. But we got to go. Part of the tour was we got to go into the library that they had just moved all of it out from New York, and obviously we couldn't sit around in there forever looking at comics the way that I would like to.
Yeah.
But they had a lot of cool stuff out. Action Comics number one, you know, and the ash can of Action Comics number one, which is like this one of three, you know, sort of comics in the world that, that was basically just submitted as a way to, to get the copyright, and with a totally unrelated cover. It's in black and white. It has like a sort of witch holding a dagger on it or something. And you know, there's they had a Detective Comics 27, and they had, some other historic stuff. And I loved it. I loved seeing that stuff. I thought that was, I love any bit of, feeling of, kind of connection to history and stuff. Mm.
Wow.
So that was good. It was good to talk to people and everything and see their fancy space age looking offices. But mainly I like going to the library.
Excellent.
What about you, Mike?
Well, yes, I too kept up with Convergence this week. It's a bit hero fighting hero, which gets a bit dull after a while. And I stubbornly picked up the second issue of the New Teen Titans arc because it had a Doom Patrol in it, and it didn't get any better, and the proper Doom Patrol didn't show up. So,
But there was a Doom Patrol. There was some Doom Patrol thing.
Yeah, they had the Tangent Universe Doom Patrol turn up.
Oh,
so yeah, you're not missing anything, really. You're welcome, everyone. what else? Weird Love had a new issue, which is a bi-monthly reprint series of old romance comics from the 50s to the 70s. I can't explain why I love that series so much, but probably the nostalgia and seeing how comics were written and made back in the day is just something about it I find really interesting. So that was good fun. And Gabriel, I also picked up issues 1 and 2 of Invisible Republic, and I really enjoyed it. I'm not just saying that. Oh, it was really interesting. I went in basically knowing nothing other than sci-fi empire type stuff, and the way you've done it is really intriguing.
Well, thanks. The response has been really, really positive. And, you know, it isn't a high concept book, so it's a book about that's about, you know, the experience of, you know, you got to read the book, you know.
Yeah.
So, that's really, I really appreciate that.
It was not what I expected at all, but it was done so well. The muted tones, the backstory that's happening, I was like, okay, yeah, I give everything that I pick up a first issue tryout, basically. And I was like, yep, okay, sold. I had to go back to my store to get the second issue.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, speaking of muted tones, that's Jordan Boyd is the colorist, and he's doing an amazing job.
Yeah.
And love working with him.
Yeah, it's highly recommend Invisible Republic if you're not already reading it, guys. So yeah, so that were the highlights of my week. So yeah. What about you, Paul? What have you been reading?
I also read Invisible Republic, which is really cool. I mean, what I loved about it was it's such a lived-in world. It's got the same sort of thing that Blade Runner has, where it's like this world exists and this is a story set in it rather than this is a world that we created just for this story. So I found that really good, just the environments and the, you know, little things like even the little crab monsters in the water and things like that. Yeah, it's very cool.
You've spent a lot of time thinking about that stuff.
Bit of world building there.
Excellent.
Yeah. But apart from that, I mean, it's been 8 days since I saw Fury Road, and I can't stop thinking about that film.
Same here.
It's my new religion.
Me too.
Yeah, I think that's a general consensus. Everyone, I think I've seen maybe 99% positive and maybe 1% not entirely sold on it. But I'm like, dude, go see it again. For God's sake, you know.
I frankly can't understand a person who wouldn't be totally sold on it. And I don't generally like anything, you know, and I love this movie.
I was listening to an interview on the Q&A podcast with George Miller, and he was saying that it was mostly written from storyboards. So they storyboarded the entire film and then, you know, started it that way and finished it off with a little bit of dialogue and stuff. And, you know, is that a very exciting prospect for you, Gabriel?
Well, I mean, in that it's good that, you know, that what's his name? The artist.
Brendan McCarthy
got credit for that. And, you know, I mean, certainly working in movies, there have been a lot of situations where I've designed sequences and had, and had a big impact on the final product, but you don't get any credit for it. And, I think that's a huge plus that, George Miller was is just a decent enough guy and straightforward enough guy to actually give the credit where it's due to someone who conceived of, you know, of what is, you know, part and parcel of the movie. And the movie is a triumph of visual storytelling, you know, and, so, you know, that's the way that they wrote the movie. The typing a script in Final Draft is not the only way to conceive of the content of a movie.
Yeah, they were saying it sped up the process so much because, you know, instead of describing action scenes, they could show them how it will all look. And, you know, that would be the starting point for, you know, putting all the characterization into the action rather than, you know, having the characterization in the dialogue.
Action is character. The things people do are what define them. And that movie is an amazing example of that.
Yeah.
Apart from being like the greatest action movie ever. I love it. I just fucking love it.
Also very exciting for me. I live in the middle of nowhere in New South Wales. And we actually have one of the actors, in our area. So we see him occasionally at the shops. And that was the guy with the metal nose.
Sure.
Oh. Okay, John Howard.
Yeah, John Howard. Yeah, he's a local in my area.
Wow. Okay, I'm gonna organize some autographs in. Paul, what's that ticking noise?
It sounds like the Doom Clock, Mike.
Bloody Doom Clock.
Always interrupting us.
Always. Okay, so, bit of an update on the Doom Clock this week. The last issue of the Doom Patrol book that we had was issue 22 of volume 5, which was cover dated July 2011, but my research has uncovered that the actual release date of said issue was 4th of May 2011, which means we've officially been without a Doom Patrol book for 4 years and 3 months.
No.
Yes. Oh, this business of release dates and cover dates. Oh, goodness me. The last appearance of the Doom Patrol was Justice League number 33, which has the cover date of October 2014, but was actually released on July 30 of 2014, meaning it's been 9 months and 3 weeks since we last saw them in action. I don't know, numbers and specifics and stuff. But this week in Doom Patrol history, we go back to 1990, where we saw the release of Doom Patrol number 34 from the Grant Morrison and Richard Case era, which sold for the princely sum of $1.50 US. Oh, those were the days. This issue had the chief encounter difficulties in trying to repair Robot Man's body, surprise, and also saw not just the return of the brain of Monsieur Mala, but it also had them declare their love for one another, which was completely unexpected, and it also had their apparent deaths, of course, because, you know, it's Doom Patrol. God. But yeah, it's when I dug a bit further and realized that, yeah, maybe the release dates are different to the cover dates. Of course they are, Michael. Ugh, good grief. Anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Today on Doomsplaining, we're going to pull up a cushion near the fire, near the Doom chair, occupied by a man who knows exactly what he's talking about when it comes to art and storytelling in the different eras of the Doom Patrol. So, Gabe Hardman, can you tell us the story of where and when you first discovered the Doom Patrol?
I can. I believe that I was first introduced to, you know, to the idea of the Doom Patrol in some way from Teen Titans, from those, you know, from the issue with Robot Man and that sort of stuff, because I was a fan of that, you know, Wolfman Perez, Teen Titans stuff when I was a kid. But really it was finding some of the 60s back issues in, you know, just like in terrible condition in a, you know, in a box, in a, you know, in a little comic store. And when I was probably like 12, you know, like I was a kid, you know, and, but somehow that stuff really appealed to me. And I was always interested in you know, in older stuff and older comics and stuff and context for things, and what really appealed to me about it was Bruno Premiani's art. I've been drawing forever. My mother is an artist. I've the art and comics was something that always really appealed to me. And his work really, really spoke to me and seemed to be a sort of apart and from other Silver Age type of stuff. And, you know, and but didn't, you know, and just it felt different and not creaky. And it turns out I was right. It is different. He came from a different tradition than other people. He was Italian, and then he fled, you know, fascism to Argentina, and then fled there to New York, and was there during the McCarthy era stuff. And, wow. You know, and he, you know, he kept fleeing places for having opinions. And then, he's a guy who had, you know, like he wrote a textbook on how to draw horses, you know? I mean, the most notoriously difficult thing in this kind of work. Yeah. And, there's a sort of quality to his draftsmanship that was, that I felt like was above, the other stuff was and continues to be an enormous influence on me.
Wow. Anything else about the book that you made it special for you?
Certainly the oddball quality of it. I mean, I've always been attracted to stuff like that.
you know, so I kind of got, I got into this, and I started tracking down issues, and I, you know, and this was, you know, this is the mid to late 80s, I guess like 87 or so. And I don't remember how you found out about things back then, but but like I had some sense that this did not end well for the Doom Patrol. And then I found in like a local shop that was kind of like, it was part mostly a used bookstore, and they had some comics. They had a copy of Doom Patrol 121, the last issue.
Wow.
And you know, and it was a little more expensive, and it was kind of a it was something I had to spend some money on, but I bought it, and I loved it that they all died. Like I really did. There was something that, you know, hugely appealing to me about the idea that, and maybe this is a little adolescent on my part, but in the last issue of their book, they put out a call for, you know, basically saying only you, the readers, through your buying this book and your enthusiasm and whatever, can save the Doom Patrol. And the readers didn't care, and they all died. Yep. And not only that, but just the fact that that idea that there were these characters and they all just unceremoniously died at some point in the past, because I'm reading this in the 80s, this stuff happened 20 years ago. And then there are little echoes that, you know, little places where people are picking up this story later, which, you know, I can't say that those, you know, like those Teen Titans issues are great necessarily, but but I did really like that, you know, the kind of sadness and doom and desperation of all of it, you know, the idea that, yeah, they all died and Cliff's still around, and, you know, and it haunts him. He's this regular sort of tough guy, but it haunts him. He, who's also happens to be a brain in a robot shell, whatever. But, and around that time was when the Paul Kupperberg series was starting up. And I also tracked down, I'm sorry, I'm just going on. But no, I also fine. Tracked down the 70s Paul Kupperberg stuff, Joe Staton drew.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. I think that I was, just because it had this kind of, you know, place in the history of it, I think I maybe was a little more lenient on it when I was 12 years old. But there was still something I liked about that thing of you know, bringing this different team back together and a sort of mystery of it. I don't know, even though that stuff I reread recently, it's not good. But then the 80s series started up around then. And I read that, and I actually quite liked the art initially. Steve Lytle, I don't know how you say his name.
Steve Lytle, we'll say.
And I liked that quite a bit. I liked the art quite a bit. And I was still on board enough with this, just, you know, because I'd enjoyed the other stuff. You know, and then obviously his the work that he was doing on there was fairly intensive, and another artist took over relatively soon, and I wasn't terribly happy about that. And as I remember it, Eric Larson took over immediately after him, and I hated his stuff. I really did.
Wow.
This is like 13-year-old me, so I'm not responsible for this. But I hated his stuff, and I kind of lost interest in the book. And so I missed out on the beginning of the Morrison stuff, but then heard some stuff about it, and like early on, a couple months in, picked up the other issues I'd missed and was on board for the rest of the Morrison stuff, which I really loved at the time. I mean, I still really like it, and I still think it's great. And it's been a few years since I've reread the whole thing. But, you know, but that hit me, you know, that stuff is then coming out when I'm like 14, 15, you know, 16 years old. And that, for me, that was like a perfect time of, you know, me really getting into, you know, odd movies and, you know, David Lynch and, you know, things that are, you know, even more offbeat stuff. And I think that in it, you know, and I think in a different kind of adolescent way, his take on the Doom Patrol played into a kind of, in that adolescent impulse to kind of, you know, tear stuff down and play with things and fuck with them and make and you know be you know
well it's about that, yeah. that age where you're sort of discovering more in the world yourself, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that worked really well for me in that way.
That's it basically that answers my next question, because I was going to ask if you followed any further adventures of the patrol at all after Morrison's run.
All right, I lied when I said that was it. I did read the Rachel Pollack stuff. Mm-hmm. I never quite connected with it at the time. I've always been sort of curious to go back and reread that stuff. Mm-hmm. To see how it played. I believe Ted McKeever had a run on.
Yeah,
the second last arc,
but yeah, it was right towards the end, the very final end of that
right
volume.
And
yeah.
So I kind of came, I followed away from it, and I came back just because I love his art. I'm a huge Ted McKeever fan from his previous stuff, and you know, and so I kind of dipped back in to try it because of that. Still never really connected with the book. But he did love his art.
Yeah.
And then what? They got it. It's canceled. Then John Byrne isn't the next thing, right?
No, John Arcudi did the next.
Yes.
With a Malaysian.
I remember
artist.
I did pick that up. I like Arcudi. I liked the art in it. You know, but I'd be interested to take a look back at that stuff because I don't have any huge memories of it.
There's two issues in that run by Seth Fisher, which were spectacular.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, I should go look at that.
Issue 13 and 14 of that run, and they're beautiful.
Yeah, I should take a look back at that. And then the John Byrne stuff, and I think I picked up an issue of that, and that was fine.
That's very diplomatic of you.
more diplomatic than it was about Eric Larson. Yeah, remember, I was 13 years old. And then, and then I know that there's the stuff from like 2009, and I like Matthew Clark's art a lot, and he's a great guy. And I didn't really read the series though, and I'm sure it's something that I should go back and look at.
It's got some ambush bug in it, which is good.
that was one of the things that got me back into it as well. Just sort of seeing that first issue of their run and going, hey, I remember that robot dude. And that
right.
kind of kicked off my whole obsession as well. But yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was good fun. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite character? Can you pin it down to one person?
Bruno Premiani. I like this book. I like what it, you know, I mean, I like these characters and I like, you know, the kind of oddball world it creates. But when it comes down to it, the reason that I love books are the people who make the books. And, mm-hmm. you know, Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani, Grant Morrison and Richard Case, these are, you know, I mean, if the people making it aren't doing something interesting and, you know, crazy and different and engaging, then it doesn't matter. Then they aren't the same characters, you know? I mean, the characters are only whoever people write, you know? That said, obviously, I will pick up any Doom Patrol thing. I read the Justice League issues with them in it. But I do feel like the most important thing is that somebody is telling an interesting and unique story more than just these characters being some ongoing thing. I mean, they're clearly not ongoing in that same way. They're not the same characters from thing to thing. It totally depends on who's writing it and drawing it.
Just out of curiosity, I know you've posted online pictures of Premiani art. Do you actually own any of his art, any of his pages?
Yes, I do. I own a half page. You know how they used to run the house ads?
Yes.
On half of the page. Mm-hmm. I own a half page from 118, I believe. And it's where a Beast Boy is a giant bat and he's facing off against a guy with who I can't remember his name, who's got, you know, you can see through him. who's also a giant. yes, I do like all that sort of stuff, though, you know. I do like all that crazy sort of stuff in it. But yeah, I have that. I missed out on there were two pages for sale from 121, the final issue, at New York Comic Con like 3 years ago. And I missed out on them because it's like I managed to get away from my table. I went over there. I tried to buy one. Mm-hmm. And this schmucky art dealer didn't take a credit card. And they're like $2,000. Yes. Like, dealing with art dealers is not pretty. But in the time that I had to go back and, you know, talk to an editor, or go and do a panel, or do something else in my actual professional, you know, job of being at the con, I missed out on buying the page. And I had seen, there are like a few other pages, and it's pretty rare stuff because Premiani really didn't do a lot of stuff. You know, I mean, obviously he did this whole series, but there's not that many pages that are out there. And so I've just watched the prices go up and up over the years. Like 10 years ago, I saw, you know, there's a page from, you know, in the one teen someplace, so, you know, with a big vulture on it. And there's a page from the one with the caveman guy. Mm-hmm. There's a few of those that are out there, and I saw them like 10 years ago at a con and they were going for like $700 or something like that a piece. And at the time I thought, God, that's a lot of money. I don't know if I can spend that. And now those exact same pages, the same dealer has those same pages and he's charging $3,000 a piece.
Oh, wow.
You know? And so like, when I was saying that those pages from the last issue were, were $2,000 a piece. Those were like really underpriced. Like the guy didn't exactly know what he had. Mm-hmm. And so whoever bought them, if they're selling them again, they're selling them for much, much more than that.
Yeah.
Wow. Golly. Do you have a favorite issue or an arc that stands out more than any other for you?
I mean, I already talked about it a little bit, but it is that issue 121, the one where they all die. I always love the ending stories. I always love stories where it's an ending where everything is coming apart and there's no hope. You know, by virtue of those 1968 or whatever, deadbeat DC Comics fans who didn't come through the Doom Patrol, you could read the issue as, this is just the kind of stuff that happens to them all the time and they get out of, you know, and it's the fact that we know that they don't come back brings all of this weight to this otherwise sort of goofy set of circumstances where they, where they're kind of, you know, falling back and being sort of defeated and then have to make this heroic choice about not blowing up 14 fishermen in Maine versus all dying. So I feel like it's a good way for them to go out. And I mean, if I had to point at an issue, that's the issue. But there are also stuff, you know, in the Morrison Doom Patrol and the Chief's plans all come together and stuff like that. I love that stuff too.
They really dropped the mic with that. You know, it's like, yeah, try and top this for killing off the team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the next, sorry.
Don't apologize.
I'm going to start like talking about what I would do with it, but I'm not going to do that.
Oh, hello.
There's a question.
There's a question. Let's dive right to that. What would you do with the Doom Patrol?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
I do know, actually. I've actually, like, especially in the last couple of months, I've given this too much thought. Like, I thought that I should be dedicating to other things. And, but I'm not going to tell you about any of it. Because I do think that there's, you know, unlike Chris Sabella, who thinks that you can't do any more Doom Patrol comics, I believe that, I think you can. I mean, I think there is something to do there. And I don't think that, as great as the Morrison stuff is, I don't think that that's a sort of be-all, end-all. I mean, I think that... that, you know, he That, I mean, certainly that run and his Animal Man run are my favorite Morrison books. And obviously they hit me at the right time. I love them in this, as they were coming out. But I don't think that you, I don't think it's the end all of stories about these characters. And I think that you could do something very different that's ambitious in a very different way than, you know, than what he did.
Did you see their episode on Batman Brave and the Bold at all?
No. I didn't.
I highly recommend that one, because if you love seeing, if issue 121 is your favorite ones, you'll really enjoy that episode of that show. It's a really nice tribute to the team and that. And it, yeah, as you said, doing something different with them. When I found out they were doing, you know, an animated episode of the Doom Patrol, my mind just, you know, exploded. But they actually did a really good job of it. And there's lots of nice cameos from villains from the 60s in there as well. So, if yeah,
I, and people have talked to me about it before. It's definitely something that I should check out, but oh, I yeah. never had.
Okay, now I know what to get you for Christmas.
So, do you think the Doom Patrol works well in other media? You know, do you think it'd ever be a TV show or hit the big screen?
I think that the problem there is a blandness problem. There's a lot of that. There's a kind of blandness filter that everything has to go through to make it to a television show, or in a lot of ways into one of these movies. And you know, and people I'm sure would argue with me about it, but one of the things that distinguishes the Doom Patrol so much is just it's, you know, is what, whenever, you know, whatever era of it, it's you know, it's a crazy niche thing that's sort of challenging. You can tell it's a niche thing because it always gets canceled. You know, it's not for everybody. And the things that about it that make it not for everybody are the things that they have to take out to make it a big giant movie. And the, you know, and most of these TV shows that are just too bland for, you know, for making a great Doom Patrol thing. Maybe they could make something out of it, but I'm skeptical. That said, that's more about like the, you know, the political realities of making something right now. Mm-hmm. I think you could make a crazy great Doom Patrol movie or series. You know, I mean, I don't think that there's anything that keeps it from being that, you know, if you had, you know, creative people behind it who had the, you know, the power and the will and the freedom to do what they wanted with
it. I'm still given hope by the fact that in The Flash, there was a very small poster for a movie called The Rita Farr Story. The fact that that was in The Flash, I'm like, come on, do something with that. Come on.
Yeah.
I'll be happy if they just get Elongated Man into The Flash one day, because he's been name dropped.
Oh, God.
If you didn't get the call from DC to come and do the Doom Patrol, who would you like to see get the call instead of you?
Nobody. It's mine, frankly.
Can I give that logic?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there are other people who could do awesome stuff with it. I know Jeff Parker, who I worked with a lot on Agents of Atlas and Hulk, friends of mine. I know he loves those characters and stuff, and he would love to do it too. And I'm sure he could do an awesome job with it. You know, I mean, there's definitely people out there who, you know, who could do great stuff with it. But I think that it, you know, it needs to be something unexpected. One of the things I definitely would want to do is, because I've talked to Jeff about this. Jeff is of the opinion that it needs to take place in the 60s, and I'm against that. I think that you know, Drake and Premiani, Morrison, they were doing stuff that was contemporary. It's not, you know, the 60s stuff isn't set in the 60s. It's they were just made in the 60s. And so, I mean, I don't think that it's something that you should go at in that nostalgic of a way. I mean, I think that you should make a new book and make it contemporary and just make it, you know, work in terms that are understandable as a Doom Patrol book.
There's, I think James Robinson did a story in a little anthology book DC did, and he did a 60s story where the team went to Hollywood and got involved with dodgy filmmakers who turned out to be aliens.
Yeah, I think that that's, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and it's and certainly I love doing period stories, and I love, you know, and I love that era, and I love all of that sort of stuff. But I do think it's I do think that the nostalgia aspect of comics is dangerous, and it's there's a huge worry, I think, about, for me, about not wanting to do stuff that's essentially fan fiction. I don't want to do things that are just about remaking things that I like. I think you have to do new stuff. You have to do stuff for other people to be to have those feelings about. If the thing already exists, there's not a reason to just do it again. You should do new and interesting stuff. I mean, the Morrison stuff is a perfect example of saying, you know, I mean, which I'm pretty sure he said at the time about, you know, that the characters needed to seem weird and crazy in the context of, you know, the late 80s and the other comics that were made at the time. And that was what he set out to do. And I really think that you have to be making a book that reacts to the times and is, you know, is about, you know, and I take back what I just said, but I do feel like you need to do something that's not nostalgic. It's easy to fall into fan fiction where you're just recreating stories you loved when you were a kid, and I don't think that that's the right way to go with stuff. I really think it's important to try to tell stories that don't only serve that.
So you said before you read the recent Justice League issues that the Patrol appeared in. What did you think of them, their setup in that, and that they were basically a team working for Argus, which was kind of like, you know, patrolling and watching all these superpowered people around the world. What was your take on that?
Let me ask you a question. Was that written by one of the co-publishers of DC Comics?
It may have been.
Now, here's the thing. When we talk about the idea of me possibly doing a Doom Patrol book, maybe I don't want to say anything terrible about the co-publisher of DC Comics.
Right. Okay. Thumper rule in effect.
But no, I wouldn't say anything terrible about it. It's fine. I mean, for me, I don't read the Justice League book normally. I read it just because I just read those two issues or whatever it was because they were in it. And so it was all wildly out of context for me. So I read books I'm into. I read books because, you know, because specific creators do them. But I'm not, you know, I'm not an avid. Well, I'm not. I don't read everything. You know, I don't read every superhero book.
Okay.
I like odder stuff. That's why we're talking about the Doom Patrol.
True.
No, I think that's a really good takeaway that in any context, the Doom Patrol should be weird. And I think that gets lost if you tell retro stories about them because, you know, looking back at the 60s, a lot of stuff seems weird now that was probably normal for most people.
Right, right. And, you know, and you can just play into our ideas of the 60s a little bit too much instead of, you know, it should be weird. It should be, they should be set apart from everything else. And I don't know. I mean, I think there are probably other ways to tell great Doom Patrol stories even. I mean, I don't think that it needs to be, you know, a barrage of clever throwaway ideas either, you know, like the Morrison run. Not throwaway, but, you know, like it doesn't have to be what Morrison was doing. There are other things to tell there. There's other stuff to do.
Yeah.
Can't be intimidated by those people who did stuff before you. You got to just do new stuff.
That's part of the appeal of the Patrol for me. The fact that there are five different volumes and each one is different from the last one.
Yeah. You know?
And yeah. That's one of the great things about them.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Shall we wrap it up there or anything else you'd like to add? Go.
I don't think so. I think that's probably it. I'm sure there's a lot more stuff that I could say about the Doom Patrol, but I won't force it on you.
Call us when you have some more, and we'll get you back on.
Okay, sounds good. I'll call you to talk about my new Doom Patrol series.
That would be great.
Oh my heart! Hang on, just pick myself up off the floor.
Wow, that would be a great day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you like to
I got Invisible Republic to do. The reality of all this stuff is that you never know, there are opportunities for freelance things out there. But the fact is it's really important to me to get Invisible Republic and some of these other creator-owned books that I've wanted to do for years and get those done. So many, because you make, as a freelancer especially, you make money up front if you do work for Marvel and DC, and there are, properties and characters that really appeal to you that you really want to do, but you have to kind of, to do the creator-owned stuff and tell these stories that you really want to tell that are personal and you own, you really have to, like, it's an amazing amount of work and focus to do it. And so I'm trying to stay focused on that stuff for the moment.
Well, it looks like it's very rewarding. I mean, it's a really good series, Invisible Republic.
Well, thanks.
Thanks. Would you like to hang around for the Mailbag of Doom segment?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I don't know if I can contribute anything, but I'll hear
it. This week on the Mailbag of Doom, we asked people what their favorite catchphrase in comics was. So we could do it differently this week, where I say the catchphrase and you guys tell me if you know which comic it's from or which character says it.
Let's do that.
Okay.
I couldn't think of one either. And all the ones I did think of, everyone wrote in with anyway. So
yeah. Well, okay. Buzz in when you're ready. So, okay. We heard from Matt Roberts, Mr. Oberts, and he said, when we're on patrol, you're doomed.
Yeah, that's
He's a dickhead.
I can't imagine where that's from.
And he also said, it's cobblering time. Yeah. He's a useless person. Thanks, Matt. We heard from David Raganti, who's at OP Wizard Beard, and he said Shazam.
Shazam or Captain Marvel.
Well done.
Okay.
We heard from Aaron Long at Juice005, who said Crack-a-Thoom. He obviously thought we were talking about sound effects.
I'll say a generic lightning bolt.
Sounds very Kirby, doesn't it?
Simonson Thor.
Yeah, Simonson Thor. But he also added, all hope lies in doom.
Yeah, well.
I don't know what that means. That would be
Aaron is a big Dr. Doom fan.
If you're going to have a catchphrase, I feel like it should have some intrinsic, you should be getting an idea across to somebody. And unless your idea is to confuse somebody so you can punch them.
Okay. We also heard from Karthik Karkarella, who had... he showed us a page of a comic where someone used his surname as a sound effect. So a bit of confusion about the questions we were asking, but that's really cool. That it looks like some X-Man being hit by a car.
I believe it's Colossus.
Karkarella as the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Very nice. We heard from Sergeant America at Sergeant America, who said, Next Wave Agents of Hate was a great series for quotes. And he included a couple of samples with someone swearing and saying teddy bears and... My robot brain needs beer. Also, I want to die. It's Machine Man, I believe. Good series, Agent of Hate.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. We heard from Ben D at Punk Rock Cellar. He said, Bazinga.
That's Sheldon.
Well done. Not really comics. Anyway, no. We heard Rich T. Wee Linkvim, who's at Ostrakas 1, who said, Spoon.
Do you know where that's from, Gabriel?
No.
That's from The Tick, probably.
Right.
You probably enjoy The Tick. He's quite absurd as well. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know a bit. I've just never interacted with it.
That's his battle cry. So
we heard from Babs Batgirl fan, who said, up, up, and away. That's obscure.
Isn't it just?
Anyone?
Superman.
Does he ever actually say that, though?
I thought he used to.
Not recently.
I don't know. It's from the radio. It's like on the radio, the Superman radio shows. Like, you can't see anything. So he would have to say that so that you had some sense that he was flying. Seriously.
Yeah, no, that.
I'm not
that
lying about this stuff.
That makes total perfect sense. I just never thought of it before.
It's radio. So it's so like you have to basically just explain what's going on all the time. So like, when they did movie serials and stuff like that, you didn't have to say that anymore. because you could just see that he's flying. So the, I mean, I don't know if he, I mean, maybe he said that in the comics to at some point, but I don't know if he ever did unless it was ironically. But I don't think there's ironic in Superman.
Well, there is a case of media leading the comics around a little bit by the nose, so maybe that happened.
Yeah, anyway, I mean, a lot of stuff came from that radio show.
Yeah. We heard from Keith Colbeck, who's at Cover Quarter K, and he's up in Canada. He said, "Boosterific."
Knowing Keith, I'll guess Booster Gold.
He loves his Booster Gold.
And the fact that Booster was in the...
We heard from Carl Smith, all right. And Carl Smith Rider.
His own name is part of his catchphrase.
Okay. You've got me there.
It's a tricky one. Carl Smith Rider said, "Strongest one there is."
No idea. Never heard it before.
Is that the Hulk?
It's the Hulk.
Is it?
It's the Hulk.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, now it makes sense.
Yeah. Awesome. We heard from Roderick Noir, who's at Roderick Ruth, and he said, "Blam, I murdered you."
Rocket Raccoon.
Rocket Raccoon. They didn't use that in the movie.
No.
It's not as cute. Imperiorator Camacho, who's at Camacho Jess, a bit of Mad Max shout there. She said, "Sweet Christmas."
I think that's Luke Cage.
It is Luke Cage, yeah.
There we go.
And I think that username is Mad Max, and it's also the Mike Judge movie, President Camacho, Idiocracy.
All right. I think it's actually her surname as well, so.
No, well, then it's not. Sorry, but I've made it in
fact. Sounds even better now.
We heard from Archangel Terrific, who's at Archangel Winter, and he said, "Imperious Rex."
I'm guessing, I think
come
that's
on,
Namor.
Come on.
Namor the Submariner, or Submarina, however you say it.
And if I know my Latin, that means Royal Dinosaur.
Right.
I don't know my Latin. There we go. We heard from Alex Turbin, who's at Alex Turbin 04401. He said, "For Odin, for Asgard."
Thor.
Thor. We heard from Susan Canary at Black Canary 02, who said, "Holy moly."
This could have been anyone, Susan.
Isn't it Billy Batson?
Maybe. I've not read enough Shazam, clearly.
And then we have from Karthik Karkarella, who finally thought of a catchphrase in front of sound effect, and he said, "I am the law."
Judge Dredd.
It's a huge...
Yeah.
Judge Dredd. And then we heard from Ange, Dr. Ange 70. Hey, Dr. Ange. He said, "Great Caesar's ghost."
I want to say, Jake... Who was that, Gabriel?
Harry White.
And sorry. Long live the Legion.
Legion of Superheroes.
Did you hear me? You sure?
I would hope
and
so.
Then we heard from Doug Zawisa at D Zawisa, and he said, "It's clobbering time."
The Thing.
The Thing. Martin Gray at Mart Gray, who does an excellent review blog called "Too Dangerous for a Girl," he said, "Soccer McGee."
No idea.
You should know this, Gabe. Come on.
I have no idea.
Silly 60s comic. It's Robbie Reed from Dial H for Hero.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, I didn't remember that part.
I only read the recent series of Dial H, so I don't think they said that in that book.
Right.
I used to pick up some of those back issues of Dial H, but I don't remember.
That would be artistically fun, that book, I reckon.
Yeah.
Always coming up with new weird things. We heard from Mystery Vlog, who gave us another "It's Clobbering Time." We also heard from at Steve6565, who also gave us "It's Clobbering Time." So a very popular one, "It's Clobbering Time."
Mm.
We heard from a guy called Tim Hanley at TimHanley01, and he said, "Suffering Sappho."
Again, no idea.
I think that it's, it's something Wonder Woman related. I mean, it might be like Etta Candy or something like that.
Could be an Amazon, yeah. Definitely Wonder Woman. So, Gabe, do you have a favorite catchphrase in comics?
I'd really prefer that there weren't catchphrases.
Wow. That could be your catchphrase in comics.
If I do anything at any point in my career where somebody says that somebody has a catchphrase, point it out and stop it, because things have gone wrong.
Catchphrase watch 2015 starts now. What about you, Paul?
Coming up with a really classic one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think my favorite is Bueno.
From Section 8.
Yes. Bueno Excelente, who fights crime with the power of perversion.
Mm-hmm. God, that says so much.
Garth Ennis having a go at everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all we've got this week. We'd like to thank Gabe Hardman for coming and talking to us, and it was very entertaining. I love that his first answer was always a lie and his second answer was the real one. It was a good feature.
Yeah, thanks so much, Gabe. It's been really enjoyable. Thanks for coming on this week.
No, thank you. I had a lot of fun.
Okay, so if you want to get in touch with us, you can reach us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We've also got the Facebook page for Waiting for Doom. And if you haven't heard yet, we've actually joined up with a group of other awesome podcasts under the banner of Inner Circle Comics, which you can find at innercirclecomics.com. The other shows on there are Didn't Read It, Comics Therapy, Panel Culture, Funtime Comics. There's also The Hangout and Two-Headed Nerd. So essentially, if you've got a podcast for every day of the week right there waiting for you. So check them out. Lots of good stuff on there. Any parting thoughts from you, Paul?
No, but next week we'll be back on our weekly schedule and we're going to look at the 60s issues again, and we're going to cover issues number 96 to number 98.
Mm, good stuff. Cool. So that's it for this week, guys. Thanks for joining us. Thanks again, Gabriel. And we'll catch you all next time.
Bye.
Thank you.